listening to the hottest internet station.
We're not mean or anything like that, you know what I'm saying?
I have a lot that I wanted to share.
We don't do smut papers.
That's what I'm talking about. Thank you.
On LR Media Group Radio, live from the Public Figure, with your host, LaDonna Ray.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, and I'm your host, LaDonna Ray, on Life and the Public Figure. We have a special guest today, Mr. Roland Martin. If you haven't heard of him, get out from under that rock or just Google him. He is spectacular. I just have to say Happy New Year, and I'm going to say Happy New Year all month, probably all this quarter, because it is such a happy, great start of the year. Goodbye, 2015. Hello, 2016. Once again, you're tuning into Life and the Public Figure. Now, how was your weekend? I had a fantastic weekend. Friday went to Roots Chris here in Chicago. Saturday went to go see a wonderful movie called Daddy's Home. Now, for those of you that don't know about Mark Wahlberg and funny man Will Ferrell, you are in for a treat. Let me just tell you. Will Ferrell, you know, he plays his role so well. His facial expressions are so believable. I mean, you just can't help but crack up and watch the movie with laughter. But let me ask you this. Have you ever been in a movie theater that's super dark? The movie's playing, everything is wonderful, and you've got someone with a big, huge tablet for a phone, and they just have to be tweeting and Facebooking with all of that light glowing on you. So you know what I did? I took a piece of paper, and I put it in my mouth just to get it a little bit moist, and I threw it to the ground. I didn't throw it at them. I started to, but I thought about the incidents where people have gotten shot in the movie theater. So I decided not to do that. But this is just so annoying. People, turn your phones off or don't look at them so bright. Turn them down. Goodness. Anyhow, Ruth's Chris, right here in Chicago, they have the best customer service. I have to give a shout out to them. Make sure you visit them. The food is spectacular. And it was so good, I didn't eat all of it because I wanted to experience it the next day. Yes, I did. Also, on Saturday, went and got my nails done. I don't know how many of you women have these stress points in your thumbnails, but mine keep cracking in the same spot every single time. I have to ask the lady, can you put an overlay? Can you put super glue? And they do it just enough to get you out the door, and then by the end of the day, your nail polish is already cracked in that stress spot. I hate that. You know what? I'm going to invent something. It's going to be called the thumb protector or something. I have no idea what needs to be done, but this is just ridiculous. Now, don't forget to tune in to Life in the Public Figure on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Central Standard Time. And we have different guests every week. We're out and about in Chicago and around the world. I am so excited to be able to bring this show to you. Life in the Public Figure is all about paying tribute to those that have paved the way. Now in life, instead of waiting until the afterlife. Now, 2015, we lost some greats. We just recently, and this was, she just made it, you know, like for December 31st, Miss, it's so hard to say it. I can't believe I'm saying this. Miss Natalie Cole made her transition on December 31st, New Year's Eve. And we are totally gonna miss her. We love you, Natalie Cole. I wish I had the opportunity to tell her that before now. But that's what this show is all about. It's all about telling public figures that we love you now in life instead of waiting until the afterlife. Once again, happy 2016, and let's get to our guest, Mr. Roland Martin.
You're listening to Life and the Public Figure with your host, LaDonna Ray, on LR Media Group Radio.
Welcome to the Roland Martin Media Teleconference. My name is Alex, and I will be your operator for today's call. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Tasha Wittenbriggs. Tasha, you may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year. For some of you, good afternoon. We're thrilled to have you here with us this morning to hear from Roland Martin, the host and managing editor of News One Now on TV One. As you all know, 2015 has was an extremely impactful year. There were some major watershed moments in the areas of politics, entertainment, pop culture, and Roland has been right on the forefront covering all of the activities, particularly with respect to issues in the Black community. So we wanted to just take a moment with you to kind of recap what some of the big stories and impact were last year, but also to look ahead to 2016 in terms of what the big stories are. It's a political year. Roland has been very much on top of the discourse happening, you know, around the elections and the ups and downs of that. So we wanted to just take this opportunity to give everyone kind of an update on his perspective and the important stories that News One Now is covering, and also to remind you that News One Now is on at a different time. Roland's show airs at 7 a.m., which was a bit of a shift from the previous time slot, and so we want to encourage you all to inform and encourage your audiences to watch or DVR the show each day to get, you know, the latest updates in our world, and that affects the African-American community. So with that said, Roland, wanted to open the floor for you to speak a bit about, from an overview standpoint, you know, about News One Now and some of the biggest stories that you guys are tracking. Roland?
All right. Well, glad everyone's here. Hope you had a great holidays and finished 2015 off with a bang to kick off 2016. Obviously, when you look back in terms of the second year, as we're now in, you know, 2 months into our third year, I think we've clearly shown exactly why this show matters and why it's here. And I think if there was any case, that any story that exemplified what we do, and it was the Daniel Holtzclaw trial. If you go to my Facebook like page, fan page, whatever it's being called today, we put together a video about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, sort of reiterating that and how mainstream media did not cover that trial extensively. Here you got 13 Black women accusing a white cop of raping them. That video has already had 5 million views on my Facebook page. It is the most viewed video I've had on my Facebook page out of all the things that we posted. And I think that speaks to directly to why we are here in terms of what we cover, why we matter. When we started, our first show back, people were blowing me up because we take the last 2 weeks off the year for, you know, there are dark days we have in a year. And we came back on Monday, you know, we had a 84% lead-in from the show that airs before us. We came back on the air. Folks were waiting to hear our perspective on these issues, and it was timely. And so I think as we look at what's happening in 2016 already, whether it's a presidential election, whether it is the president talking about gun control, whether you look at what we did today, the lead story having the Black district attorney from DeKalb County on talking about the he's going to pursue an indictment against a police officer who killed an Air Force veteran. I mean, the bottom line is we are here to deal with those things that mainstream media will ignore, that speaks to our issues, and that confront some of the difficult things. I mean, the shooting in the Mother Emanuel was our top story. We did the top 10 stories of 2015. That was our top story, obviously covering the Bill Cosby story, things along those lines. So you're looking at us sort of really gaining our footing and providing a source of information to the audience that is critically important. And so you can look at the ratings of the show, but more importantly, you look at how we are definitely driving the conversation. I mean, look at, you know, we had Samaria Rice, the mother Tamir Rice, on the show on Tuesday. And my interview with her is gaining some traction because she said that she felt LeBron James and other athletes should have been more vocal who were there in Cleveland about the death of Tamir Rice. and Sports Illustrated, you know, picked up on that. Then Stephen A. Smith talked about it today on First Take. And so I think you can see how we are driving discussions outside of our show and our audience, and I think that's what's important.
Thank you, Roland. I'm going to turn over moderating of the call to Jalila Larsoul at the Front Page Firm, who will open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you, Tasha. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. This is especially for Roland taking the time right now. So can you, operator, can you offer the first question?
Yes, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. And it looks like our first question here is from Meta Meride at Savoy Media Outlet. Meta, you can go ahead and ask your question at this time.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, good afternoon to all. And Roland, my question has to do with your upcoming story ideas for 2016. And a lot of the focus now is on the presidential election coming up and this current issue with regard to gun control. But there doesn't seem to be a focus on the issues impacting veterans, and particularly the fact that 30% of our military are comprised of minorities, and we just don't seem to get those stories on programs such as yours to focus on the grassroots organizations that are trying to address a lot of the issues that are impacting our returning veterans, homelessness, joblessness, frustration, suicides, and things of that nature.
Well, actually, we have. We have dealt with that. First of all, when we had the town hall meeting with Hillary Clinton in South Carolina, we did a whole hour. One of the questions I specifically asked her dealt with veterans' assistance to them and making them a priority if she becomes president. We also last year had as a sister who was in the Army. And she had she created a home for women who had been the victims of domestic violence who served in the military. We also in the discussions we had retired. You know, we're the only show you'll see a black general outside of Colin Powell. So we had a conversation with retired General William Kip Ward about the need to provide services and assistance to veterans in this country. And so we have had those cases. I mean, I can tell you right now that I am very much involved with communicating with Paul Rykoff and the folks with IAVA about reaching out to and assisting vets as well. And so it's something that we have done and frankly will continue to do.
Thank you. Thank you, Roland. Thank you, Meta, for that. That was a good question. Moderator, next question, please.
Yes, and the next question is from Mr. Chris Hill with oldschool101.com. Mr. Hill, you can go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. We run a morning show on Old School 101 that covers some of the issues that you talk about on your television program. And this morning, the hotbed topic was the governor of Maine making remarks about out-of-state drug dealers and basically saying that black people are coming into Maine selling drugs and impregnating white women. When is enough is enough? When can it be, what's the word I want to use? When can mainstream media, but when is it appropriate for us as broadcasters to finally tell people like that enough is enough?
It's always appropriate for us to do that. First of all, you got to understand, the governor of Maine is nuts. I mean, this guy has made all kinds of comments on numerous occasions And, you know, he frankly makes Donald Trump look like a Boy Scout. And so that's this is just who he is. And I think it is our job to actually put him on blast and call him out. We did so on the show. And it is laughable when you raise that. But see, here's the other thing, though. We should call him out, body check him, but also we should be providing critical analysis to what is happening in the presidential campaign. All of a sudden, because white kids are overdosing on heroin, all of a sudden you are seeing people say that we need to have compassion for those families and for those folks who are affected because of how difficult this situation is. Please show me the compassion you had white folks providing in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s for black folks who are being impacted by crack cocaine and addiction. I think it's important for us in media to show, it's a whole different reaction. And you've got Chris Christie, who is passionate. People are crediting him, and he's so passionate because he had one of his well-off friends who died because of a heroin overdose. And we're going, we got some folks who are not well-off, who are black, who have been impacted as well, but we don't hear the same sort of compassion. We hear no tougher sentencing and things along those lines. And so what we must do is we must dissect what he is saying and begin to say, oh, you're so now outraged and you're blaming, you know, black folks. And then to go that far with it, you know, they're just impregnating our white girls. Well, you're in Maine. First of all, you're largely a white state, so you don't have to offer the qualifier white to understand that we know who you're talking about. But that's what you're facing, and so our job is to call it out, and also to call out those who aren't doing it, which is why we called out mainstream media for ignoring the Daniel Holtzclaw trial. There's no you can't, and look, this will be real. You can't tell me if 13 white women were raped by a cop that trial would have been utterly ignored by every cable outlet in the country. It is our job to hold people accountable and to speak the truth regardless.
Thank you, Roland, and thank you, Chris. Moderator, the next question, please.
Yes, the next question is from Big C Encourager with Urban Gospel Radio. Big C Encourager, you can go ahead and ask your question.
Hello, Roland. Big C the Encourager, Urban Gospel Sounds. Wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts about the affluenza team? And do you feel that this will be a way of escape in the future for young people who commit violent crimes and avoid prison time?
If you white and rich, yeah. How I feel? Throw his rich little ass in jail. That's how I feel. First of all, the judge in Fort Worth who gave this sentencing has no job, has no business ever being a judge again. That is beyond despicable. If this guy can get drunk, kill four people, and buy this ridiculous affluenza defense and get off scot-free. And this little punk needs to be in jail. He killed four people, and injured several others. He left one person paralyzed. And so now we have his mom. Oh, my God, she's complaining because she's complaining about the conditions of the jail. Well, baby boo, you're going to have to deal with them for a little bit longer. But this shows you the two Americas. You cannot convince me ever that you're going to see a black teen drive drunk, kill four people, and then basically be sent home on probation. Ain't going to happen, but that's what happens when you are, let's just be honest, rich and white in America.
Well, thank you for that. Next question, please.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, more on life and the public figure.
Hello, lovely people. I am Nicole Reed, and I'm an It Works distributor. I'm excited about sharing these amazing all-natural skin, hair, body, and lifestyle products at amazing discounts with our loyal customer program. Not only do we sell and educate about great health products, but we all have great job opportunities for those who would like an extra income in time for Christmas and beyond. Find me at NicoleSoRandom.MyItWorks.com. or on Facebook through Nicole Reed or Nicole So Random. Visit my website for these all-natural, amazing products and to find out how to put cash in your pockets for the holidays. Remember, be healthy, be wealthy, and be wise. It works.
Seabury, 1368 and a half East 53rd Street in Hyde Park, Chicago. You'll be amazed at Seabury's assorted toppings, self-serve smooth, delicious frozen yogurts, as well as our tasty, creamy sorbet. To warm you up this winter, try our steamy, flavorful hot chocolate
and hot apple ciders. We also cater special events.
Think of us for your holiday treats on the web at myzberry.com or call today, 773-855-8754. Zberry, Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Hey, what's up? This is your man, Christopher Williams, and you're listening to my girl, LaDonna Ray, on Life and the Public Figure. Stay tuned.
I'm sorry if I seem uninterested, or I'm not listening, or I'm indifferent. Truly, I ain't got no business here, but since my friends are here, I just came to kick it. But really, I would rather be at home all by myself, not in this room with people who don't even care about my well-being. I don't dance, don't ask, I don't need a boyfriend, so you can't.
We're back.
Yes, the next question is from Sylvia Wilson with Prestige Magazine. Ms. Wilson, you can go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you today?
Doing great.
Good. This is Sylvia from Prestige Magazine. I have a question about the stricter gun laws that are being put into place from President Barack Obama. I've read where the governor of Alabama is saying that he's going to fight him with everything that he has to make sure that those gun laws are not being able to be elevated or manifested. So what is your take on that?
Well, first of all, look, I mean, you've got folks who will come up with every single excuse as to why this should be done. But the bottom line is, if there is a way to impact gun deaths, I think you do it. But we have folks who they don't want any type of regulation. They don't want anything that can get in the way, and that's a problem. And I think it is ridiculous. I think these people are nuts. I think when you listen to them complain about a lot of this here, I mean, it's just it's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy listening to them, you know, whine and complain as if somehow the world is ending because you're going to have expanded background checks, which and look, the polling data shows it. A huge number of Democrats and a majority of Republicans, independents, and gun owners support what the president announced. So what you have is a clear hatred of anything this president says. And so at the end of the day, that's what it is. But poll numbers don't lie. They don't lie. People understand what the president said. They support it. And so I say, you know what? Let haters hate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Sylvia. Next question, please.
Yes, the next question is from Susan Jones with Detroit Magazine. Susan, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Roland. This is Susan Jones with Impact Detroit Magazine. My question is, can you elaborate a little bit on the ministers that went into the meeting with Donald Trump? And can you expound a little bit about what your take was on that particular conversation?
Well, one of the things that we will, if you look at, we had that conversation on the show. In fact, I talked to one of the pastors who met with Donald Trump. He had no idea what when the heck they were even talking about. He couldn't answer a single question in terms of what specifically in terms of public policy they were discussing. In fact, one of the other pastors was supposed to join me in my Tom Joyner segment. I had him booked, personally talked to him, and then he didn't show up the next morning. One of the other pastors, Pastor Daryl Scott of Cleveland, he has been purposely avoiding coming on our show. I mean, I've hit him up directly, and he is scared to death to come on and talk about it. And so that's what you got going on. This is, I mean, it's no shock to me. It's no shock that they don't want to have that conversation. In fact, that video of the pastor, that contentious video between me and Pastor Parson of Virginia who met with Trump, you know, that's gotten 2.2 million views on my Facebook page. I mean, I've gone all over the country, and people have been stopping me, thanking me for questioning them. I mean, the bottom line is you got to understand, you got a bunch of these pastors who met with Trump. Nobody knows them. You never heard of them. And this is their moment in the sun. And so the reality is I don't care if pastors meet with Trump or any Republican candidate. I'm still going to ask the same question, what did y'all talk about in the meeting? And these guys somehow don't have the capacity to even answer that question. And so that's why they're going to continuously getting pushed on this, because if you are going to stand before folks and say that you're representing black folks, well, I want to know what was said. They still cannot tell you what policy-wise was truly said.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Next question.
The next question comes from Naomi Richard with The Austin, Texas. Naomi, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Roland, for taking our calls. My name is Naomi Richard, and I write for the Austin Villager in Austin, Texas. So I'm in the state of Texas.
Yes, no. I'm tell Tommy hello. Yes, I'm familiar with the paper.
Do.
Remember, I run
Thank
three black
so
newspapers.
Much.
I'm familiar.
Thank you. He'll be excited to hear that.
Yeah, I used to work at the Austin American Statesman.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
You have a very good memory. We want to talk about the State of the Union. With a short term left ahead, if you were the advisor for President Obama, what should his focus be? Should he try to take on gun violence, prison reform, and unfair sentencing of those wrongfully incarcerated? Or should he just pick one topic and just maybe focus on gun violence?
Well, first of all, no president can pick one topic. There are numerous things that happen throughout the course of the year. What I would have done is the president vetoed the Republicans in the House and the Senate passed a bill that would have repealed the Affordable Care Act. The president vetoed that today. I would have waited until Tuesday. I would have vetoed that sucker, and then I would have brought the veto, and I would have turned around in my speech and handed it to Governor Paul Ryan, and would have said, "Now look, y'all voted 62 times to repeal health care. It's not going to happen. So when are y'all going to spend some time focusing on the other pressing issues in America?" Now that's just me. Now maybe that's been a little gangster, been a little. But I figured, look, it's your last year. You got nothing else to lose. But I think one of the things that the president should return to and jam Congress on deals with the issue of jobs. I mean, see, it's amazing how that was all the focus in 2009 and 10 and 11 and 12. But soon as the campaign was over, you haven't heard this constant discussion about jobs. That should be the case. One of the other things is the president should push Congress that they must pass a real criminal justice reform bill. One of the first bills he signed into law reduced the crack cocaine, the powder cocaine disparity. Used to be 100-1, it's now 18-1. That should be reduced from 18-1 to 1-1. There's no difference between powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Cocaine is cocaine. And so getting a criminal justice reform bill, I think, is crucial. Is crucial matters as well, and I still believe that if there is one place where the president has failed in his administration, and I will debate it with anybody, is in the area of housing. His original HAMP program was to help several million Americans. It only helped about 700,000 or so. They've had numerous housing programs, but there are still people who are being affected. Black people lost 53% of all of our wealth due to the home foreclosure crisis beginning in 2007. 53%. Do understand that had direct impact on the number of African Americans who were able to get loans. In 2013, $23.09 billion in student loans were handed, in loans to businesses, small businesses were handed out. Black folks got about $385 million of that $23.09 billion. You're talking about less than 2%. Yet in 2008, the last year of President Bush's terms, we got 8.2%. Why the massive drop? Largely because of home ownership, because that was the kind of collateral that African Americans had. And it's real simple. No home, no loan, no business. And so those, to me, are some of the critical issues that the president has to address. Criminal justice reform and housing certainly have to be there, and jobs.
Can I ask one follow-up question?
Yes, fine.
Yeah, real quick, though, because we have questions. Okay, all right. John Legend has been going around advocating reducing the incarceration rate by doing things like keeping kids off the street because the truancy officers arrested them, legalizing marijuana, and legalizing prostitution. Do you feel the entertainers are helping the legislative process or hindering it?
Well, first of all, I'm not aware of, in terms of specifically legalizing marijuana and prostitution. I do know for a fact they were pushing the president on an executive order dealing with the issue of criminal justice. And look, the reality is when entertainers have a huge platform, they reach people who ordinarily don't watch news shows, who don't cover politics, and I think their voice matters. You don't lose your ability to speak to issues because you are an entertainer. And so I certainly welcome their involvement in public policy issues.
Thank you, Roland. Next question, and we have quite a few people on the line, so everybody can keep their questions. One question is pretty short, so Roland can take the time to answer. All right, thank you. Next question.
Yes, the next question comes from Humility Perspective. Humility, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Roland. This is Humility. I write for Perspective Today magazine. I've had the pleasure of interviewing you with Front Page before, and it's always an honor and an opportunity. My question to you is, the young lady earlier asked the question about the pastors going to meet with Donald Trump. My question to you is, how do you believe that that should have been handled to have had a better outcome and to have given us the results as to knowing what was said. How should that actually have been
easy, easy. Have the people who organized it be articulate enough to actually explain it, but also stop being afraid of black people. I've seen Pastor Mark Burns and Daryl Scott. They have gone on Fox, on CNN numerous times, MSNBC, BBC. They've done interviews everywhere. They don't want to come talk to black people. They have not come on the Tom Drennan Morning Show. They have not come on the Ricky Smiley Show, Steve Harvey Show. They haven't come on TV One, the black media. Don't sit here and be a black pastor and try to pretend that Donald Trump has a plan of action that speaks to black folks, and then you're scared to come talk to black folks. And so if you're going to do that, don't be afraid. Don't say, oh, well, we had a great meeting, and we're going to, at a later date, we're going to tell y'all what happened. Well, what the hell is the point of doing that? You know, if you're going to articulate what took place, feel free to say it. Also, they took a big group picture. Release the photo. Don't be scared. Don't run from it. Be open about it. That's what you do. Transparency is key. And again, let me be clear. Look, President George W. Bush, when he was governor of Texas, when we ran for president, he met with black preachers. Ben Carson has. Jeb Bush has. Senator Rand Paul met with a group of black preachers. And Pastor Jamal Bryant, they periscoped the whole meeting live so people could actually hear the questions being asked and what took place. If you want to meet, talk to folks, and you want to get black votes, be transparent in doing so.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you, everyone. And, again, if everybody can really, because we're getting closer to our time, and we want to make sure everybody has the opportunity, so if you make your questions pretty direct and short, and it would be really appreciated. Next question.
Yes, the next question comes from Willie McIver with Beyond the Praise. Mr. McIver, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Great. Thank you. It's Willie Mae McIver, and good afternoon, Mr. Martin. I'd like to talk about the unemployment rate. It's holding at 5%, 292,000 jobs added last month. What do you think we could do in 2016 to increase more jobs, especially in the African-American community?
Well, first of all, there are 1.9 million black-owned businesses in America, and there are 1.9 million black people who are unemployed. One of the things that black folks have to do is also begin to spend money with black folks. That is critically important. And so imagine if we were able to grow business capacity and every black-owned business was able to actually hire one person, you can completely wipe out the black unemployment rate. The problem is you got 1.9 million black-owned businesses, 1.8 million of those black-owned businesses have no employees. There's only one person in the shop. And so, growing that base capacity is what's important. I think, well, obviously education has to play a critical role, but also where the jobs are. And that is, you know, we talk about training programs, but also it's what are those particular jobs you're being trained for that's critically important, so meeting those needs. And so those things have to happen. I'm not interested in training programs that don't lead to jobs. I believe in, okay, is to replicate what is actually working. That's what's important. And we've also got to push political leaders to restore summer jobs programs that provide the kind of expertise and income for young folks as well. Those are numerous programs 20 years ago. For some reason, we've abandoned those programs. They must come back.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Willie Mae. Appreciate it. Next question, please.
Yes, the next question comes from N.Y. McGee with Your Web. N.Y., you may go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, yes, this is Nye McGee from EUR Web. Mr. Rowland, my question to you, or more so, I would like to get your thoughts on this quote-unquote new black movement, where you have celebrities like RZA and Pharrell and Common saying things like, you know, pretty much if we extend our hands to white folks, more often we get respect. How we dress and how we speak now determines how we are treated. And if we just speak and dress better, then, you know, we won't have these misfortunes and tragedies. And these celebrities have been dubbed like the new black movement, especially like on black Twitter. And I'm just wondering if you're familiar with these comments and your opinion on this quote-unquote new black movement and their stand.
Well, first of all, I'm familiar with the comments and they're laughable. I mean, but here's the piece. It's not like those are new comments. I mean, I could take you back to folks saying that stuff in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, the 40s, the 30s, the 20s, the early teen years, and also back in the late 1800s. That ain't new. It ain't nothing about it that's new. And we're always trying to name something, and you know, trying to have the latest person. And so here's a piece. It's easy to dispute when somebody says some nonsense like that, because the reality is, you can look, if they were lynching black folks wearing their uniforms during the Jim Crow era, don't think that somehow a suit is going to be bulletproof and keep you from getting gunned down by a cop.
Thank you.
All right. Next caller, please.
The next question comes from Cherie Branch with Branching Out. Cherie, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Roland. This is Cherie Branch with Branching Out TV. I would like to ask about Bill Cosby with his arrest. He says due to politics. What do you think?
Well, first of all, what I interviewed Bill Cosby's attorney, Monique Presley, and this is what she said. She said that the district attorney in the suburban county of Philadelphia who charged Bill Cosby with sexual assault made that the central theme of his campaign when he was running against a Republican candidate who was the previous district attorney when the charges initially were investigated. And so what they said is that the fact that he filed these charges, this clearly was an effort to honor his campaign promise, and many people suggest that this guy who announced the charges, I think it's Kevin Steele, I mean, he made Bill Cosby the central theme of his case. And so the Cosby camp says that's what actually happened. And so there's no doubt it played a role in him winning. And so no one should have been shocked that this guy was going to then come back and actually file the charges.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Next question, please.
The next question comes from LaDonna Ray with LR Media Group. LaDonna, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, hello, Roland. My name is LaDonna Ray, and I'm a publicist and the radio host of Life in the Public Figure. Thank you so much for having us. I would like to talk about restorative justice practices as a way to address the school-to-prison pipeline issue in Chicago. There's a lot of focus on Chicago becoming what's referred to as Chirac because of all of the massive killings. And part of the issue is, or could be, a cycle that is not broken with the young people, i.e., students that get put out of educational institutes that essentially end up in the pits of violent groups or gangs. What say you?
Well, first of all, I've always thought it was stupid as all get out to actually kick somebody out of school. That's dumb to me. Why would you put a young person out of school as the somehow that's the answer? I believe in in-school suspension. And I think that's really what's really important. It really jumps out. I think that when you look at what's happening on the education front and our kids, we have folks who are really playing around, who are not being serious, who do not want to address the crucial issues that exist out here. And I think what we have to do is recognize that we cannot keep booting people out of school and thinking that is going to do it. You cannot bring a law enforcement mentality to that situation. It has to be an educational issue, pure and simple. That's how you solve that. That's how you deal with it. And we can't exacerbate the problem by kicking kids out of school.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Next question.
And the next question comes from Makiba Childs with Melissa Source. Excuse me. Makiba, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Good afternoon, Roland. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. My question for you is, there's discussion about the current presidential candidates not fully addressing the concerns of the African-American community. One of those needs and concerns is the access to mental health. Even President Obama has stated that he wants to spend $500 million to increase health care access in his new gun control proposal, yet there are those who oppose that idea. What is your view on that, and how do you see the direction of mental health access going, especially in the last year of Obama's administration and with the current presidential election?
Well, first of all, I think we make a mistake when we somehow only look at mental health from the perspective of President Barack Obama, when in fact what has happened is mental health has been impacted by tremendous cuts on the state and local level. You look at what is happening in cities and counties on the state level, I think that's where you've seen these massive cuts. It's because we see it to be expendable. And so what happens is you have a significant discussion about increasing military spending and things along those lines, but then we say, well, you know, let's not even worry about those mental health services. And then something jumps off. We go, what happened to the mental health? Well, because we've cut. That's how. And so I think what has to happen is we can't be looking at Washington, D.C. Really what needs to happen is we should have our focus on what is happening, again, on the state level, on the county level, on the city level, and that's where we're most impacted.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, more on life and the public figure.
Listening to the hottest internet station on LR Media Group Radio.
You gotta go and get angry at all of my honesty. You know I try, but I don't do too well with apologies. I hope I don't run out of time, cause someone call a referee. Cause I just need one more shot, have forgiveness. I know you know that I made those mistakes maybe once or twice. Once or twice, I mean maybe a couple of hundred times. So let me redeem or redeem on myself tonight. Cause I just need one more shot, second chance. Yeah. Is it too late now to say sorry? Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Single piece of the blame if you want me to. But you know that there is no innocent one in this game for two. I go, and then you go out and spill the truth. Can we both say the words and forget this? Yeah. Is it too late now to say sorry? Cause I'm missing more than just your body. Oh. Is it too late now to say sorry? Yeah, I know that I let you
And we're back.
And the next question comes from Meta Merida with Savoy Media Outlet. Meta, you may go ahead with your question.
Thank you. It's Meta with Savoy. Roland, you mentioned earlier, and this is going to definitely be brief, about the home loan, things of that nature as it impacts the Black community. And I just want to know if you would be interested to come to New York to have a town hall meeting, because we're getting a plethora of development projects, but it's not inclusive of Black-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, and women businesses, and it's impacting those of us who live in high-cost regions, because we have the zombie homes, we've got the foreclosure issues, and the loan failures of these Black businesses who can't, like you said, they're sole proprietors. So we have this disconnect with the economic infrastructure that everybody's touting here in the Big Apple, and the disadvantages and the lack of opportunity. So we need to have more of the media presence for those of us who are in these trenches fighting those same local municipalities that are taking all the money, and we're paying the taxes, but we're not getting the return on the investment.
Well, I think one of the things that has to happen is the folks who are approving these deals have to also be held accountable. So you have a lot of these local municipalities, you have these council members, you have commissioners who are approving these affordable housing projects, mixed-use projects, which literally turn into be just windfalls for private developers. And so, I'm certainly not opposed to covering any of these stories and speaking to folks and talking to them about it, because it is a problem when you begin to look at how tax bases are also eroded, especially when you look at tax increment finance districts and how those things are being set up to really not help people but also enrich private developers.
Okay. Thank you, Roland. And I believe the last question, I don't think we have any more questions. We have one more.
It looks like the last question comes from Humility Perspective. Humility, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Roland, I would like to ask you, what is your biggest fear or concern should we get a new president as it pertains to, the life of the average African-American out here with all the disparities and the injustices? What is your biggest fear?
The issue for me is not the biggest fear of what's going to happen with the next president, because I can look back over President Obama's two terms. It's not like we've had tremendous success on the African American perspective. What I am most concerned about is how are we going to turn out. When I say turn out, I'm not just talking about in the primaries and then in the general, what is going to happen the day after the general election. I think what happens is we do not offer and proceed with an aggressive agenda from the day the election is over. You know, we talk about Congress comes back into session and, there needs to be an agenda. Somebody calls a meeting by May, by June, by July. Then all of a sudden it's, well, let's put it together and wait for everybody to, come together for the meeting. Well, guess what? Other folk have already moved. LBGT folks gave President Barack Obama a 54-page agenda in the first 60 days of his presidency. Black civil rights leaders met in the fifth year of his presidency. What does that tell you about being late when it comes to your agenda?
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Millie. Thank you so much. Moderator, could you now let us know what the next part of this call is?
Yes, it looks like we have no further questions at this time, so I would like to hand the call back over to Mr. Roland Martin for his final remarks.
Well, folks, as I said, we cover, it's amazing the ground that we cover on News One Now every day. What I also do is after the radio, after the TV show, I also have my own nationally syndicated radio show. And so we've just added markets, Philadelphia. I just got a call. We added Beaumont. We're in Chicago. And then, of course, we're in North Carolina, Mississippi, Georgia as well. And so we're building that, which is a three-hour-a-day syndicated radio show, which allows us another platform to be able to cover a lot of these crucial issues. I mean, so I think, you know, look, Kathy Hughes, the founder of Radio One, coined the phrase information is power. And so I think our job is to provide that information to be able to enlighten people in terms of what is happening in this country, in this world. And when we do, it changes things. And I think that's what's important. We have to be able to impact public policy, be able to push people, push and prod and demand accountability. And, you know, and we have a very clear focus when it comes to this show. I am very clear in terms of my purpose and what we're trying to achieve. And so we're going to keep doing that. And so our job is to not being afraid of black people, not be afraid to say black, talk black, and be unapologetically black. And so we're going to keep doing that each and every single day at 7 a.m. on TV One and at 10 a.m. On the Roland Martin Show on radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I think Roland covered a lot of ground as far as issues and questions, and I just want to thank you, Roland, for taking the time and giving us such great insight. Really appreciate it. And you, the media, for taking the time and your support. Please make sure you, first of all, please make sure you follow Roland on social media, Facebook/Roland Martin fan page. Twitter at Roland.
No. Okay. No. Facebook.com/Roland S. Martin fan page.
Okay.
Don't leave the S. Yeah. So that way, so if you're looking for those videos I referenced earlier, they're on the Facebook page. And the same, Twitter is also Roland S. Martin, and so is Instagram, Roland S. Martin. And I'll leave y'all with this. Some of y'all might be asking. Why the S. There's the greatest bass fisherman ever. His name Roland Martin. He's still alive. He's hugely popular. He's like about a 6'3 white guy with blonde hair. So we look a little different. And so that's one of the reasons why it's Roland S. Martin, because of that guy. So he and I have been fighting over the last 10 years for the top spot when you type in Roland Martin in Google. I beat him back since 2008, so he's still below my name. So.
Yeah, and that's true. That is definitely true. So anyway, Roland, thank you. And I believe at this point we have completed the call. Thank you. Make sure you tune in to Roland Martin every morning at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for News One Now. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Life and the Public Figure with your host, LaDonna Ray, on LR Media Group Radio.